When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast that tells you everything you need to know about interiors and how to make it all really work for you in your own home.
DFS has kindly sponsored this podcast. DFS has its very own design studio and offers exclusive ranges designed in collaboration with brands including French Connection, Jewels, House Beautiful and Country Living.
So Kate, gorgeous to see you. It's just been the Easter holidays. We've all had a bit of time off. I've had a bit of a holly bobs, but you,
don't
my
say
darling,
that.
So, has that a vetoed word?
You can't say that word.
I can say holly bobs if
I want. That and veggies.
Veggies?
Have you been eating your veggies while you've been on your holly bobs?
It's all too cutesy, isn't it?
Yeah,
all right. I retract it. But anyway, moving on. You've been to Milan and I want to know all about it.
So. Well, it was a very, very fleeting visit. I actually went for one job, so I wasn't there very long. However, it was quite exciting looking at other people had been there and the things I did see that finally, it looks like some new stuff is coming through.
So just to interject really quickly. So you weren't going to Milan to drink Negronis and eat pizza. You were there.
Well, maybe had the odd one.
You were there for the big exhibition, the Milani Salone, where everybody in Europe's coming together. All the big interior brands, the furniture brands, the designers take over the whole city to showcase the new ranges.
So there's,
ranges.
Eight airport hangars full of interiors brands on the outskirts of the city. And then there's also in the middle of the city, it's called Fuori Salone. So it's that means outside the furniture fair. Every garden, every palazzo, every space is also taken over by installation and brands doing different things and setting up exhibitions. I mean, it's an incredible sight. It goes on for about 4 or 5 days. And I think I learnt when I was there earlier this year, it's responsible for 10% of the Italian GDP, which is extraordinary. And yeah, new colours coming through.
Oh, go on, tell me. This is what I want to know.
I've just been feeling...
Are we over the pink thing yet?
Well, no, we're not over the pink thing, which is great.
Okay.
I love, there's still lots of pale pink. It's not going anywhere. The terracotta, the earth tones, all those things which were beginning to come through last year, still coming through, still there, still lots of velvet. Don't worry about that.
Oh, it's so we can all, hold on to our velvet sofas for another year.
We can hold on to all of that. And those colours are all still lovely. But I think I mentioned a few episodes ago that there was beginning to be a look at that baby blue, very pale blue.
Yeah, you headed that up.
Well,
last
that,
series.
A lot more of that. And also mint was coming through and chocolate. Just think ice creams, you can't go wrong.
Oh my God,
so,
totally.
And mint
are you
and
sure
chocolate.
You just went in gelato parlours?
Do you think, now I come to think about it, I might have been in the wrong place. But no, it was interesting to see that it feels like there's a bit of a change coming
through.
They
feel like quite fresh, modern colours.
Really quite fresh. And also, I don't like it when it's too pastel-y. You put that together with pale pink, that doesn't work for me. Mm. But actually, mixing it with, you know, a deep, dark chocolate brown. Mm. And leather's gone sort of soft and buttery, which is also a really nice colour. So it felt, actually, that there was something fresh going on. We're going to talk about trends in more detail at the end of the month after Clark
Episode
and World Design
Week.
We're
going to do that, aren't
so we will see more of that. So we'll come back to that. That was just a little heads up. Now, while I was working my socks off in the ice cream parlours of Milan, I believe you've just been gadding about in Morocco.
Yeah, we went on a family holiday to Morocco for a week and I cannot believe that I have never been. Usually when I'm on holiday, I put my phone away. I tend to not be on Instagram. I don't think about work. The whole point is escapism. But I was on Instagram every day wanting to share all this fabulous colour inspiration. You know, we went to Jardin de Majorelle, which is that Yves Saint Laurent. It was like his holiday home.
Well, that's
like
the colour of your hall, isn't it?
Yeah,
effectively. That,
so that
kind of very
really
rich blue.
Rich blue, yeah. So I definitely need to book in another trip, preferably with a girlfriend. And you do a bit of research, work out what you want to buy before you get there, because it is
overwhelming. Oh, that's a good tip. So have an idea what
have
of the colours you want,
list.
Or certainly the size. If you want a rug, presumably, measure the space.
Well, I was quite clever. So we had the lovely...
I've just sneezed. Excuse me.
Cute. You could have blamed that on the dog.
Yeah, I would have done. Squeak. I think she's just farted, actually.
That wouldn't be a surprise. Yeah, what is she saying about you? I know, she's giving you right evils now, Kate. I did have one sneaky plan to buy a runner for my hallway. That was one place I identified in the house where I'd really like a rug. And so I kind of, in the back of my head, said, should we fall into a rug shop? That I already had the dimensions of my landing that this rug would go into and had a very clear idea of what colour I wanted. So that would be my tip. Have a steer on the colour and the size. And then when we were in this rug shop, I said, I only want to see pink runners, roughly 4 metres long, and don't show me anything else. And a runner is actually small enough to roll up and put in your hand.
I was going to say, so did you travel over with an empty suitcase?
No, I didn't, because it wasn't a shopping trip. And I promised the boys it wasn't going to be a shopping trip. But I did buy 23 kilos worth of luggage and only take 18. So that five kilograms was just enough to get a rug home, yeah.
That's also a very good tip then, because I've often wondered how it works when you ship stuff home.
Otherwise,
and how much
they're
it costs.
All geared up for that. I
mean, oh, are they?
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
not difficult.
I mean, I asked the chap if he was to send it to us. He said it cost about £30 to post a rug back to the UK. So if you're going to buy a massive
one, that doesn't seem bad,
one,
does it? And if you're spending 100 quid or something, or 200 quid on a rug, actually an extra 30 for ease of getting
and
it back.
And they are much, much cheaper over there than they are being sold for over here.
Yes. Right, enough of your holiday plans. Anyway, we need to tell listeners what we're talking about today. So coming up, couple of new interiors shows on telly, which is very exciting because it's been a while, frankly. And then we're going to go and have a look at your kitchen where there's been some more changes.
Nothing
stands
still. Nothing ever stops still here, yeah.
And of course, our regular design crime slot coming up at the end. But first of all, I wanted to explain why we're not at my house, which is where we were supposed to be. And that's because my house is sometimes used as a location for photo shoots. And it's interesting because you know, all sorts of houses are used. If you're doing an interior shoot, then yes, you might need a really big space. But actually, this time, it's just my bathroom they're using, and it's a beauty company.
So at the moment, your house is full of people you don't know.
Yeah.
Running around your house. Models, makeup artists.
Yeah, but that's not all of it. They came in and said, oh, we absolutely love this bathroom. It's perfect for our shoot. And I said, okay, that's fine. It's available on these days. And then they sent two painters over and they've repainted it.
So what, they've got rid of... So your bathroom's quite...
My bathroom's dark green.
So now what colour is it now then, Kate?
Well, I'm not sure if I can describe it in polite society.
Is it grey?
Well, it's a sort of... brownie, grey-ish kind of mud, yellow
You're not
mud
loving
colour.
It, I'm guessing.
It's awful.
But this is obviously a way to make your house pay, isn't it?
Well, it's a sort of earner for the house. And the shoots vary. So we've had, there was the other time when we had a fashion shoot for a Sunday magazine And my husband was walking up the stairs and saw a pair of very long half-naked legs lying on our bed because there was a lingerie shoot going on.
Oh, my goodness.
That was hilarious. He carried on very swiftly up to the top.
I bet he did.
And didn't come out. He was texting me from the top of the house going, can I come down for lunch now? Is everybody dressed? I'd forgotten to tell him. And we haven't really done interior shoots as such. It's been more product shots.
My history as a photographic stylist is I've used loads of location houses over the years, but the ones that I tend to use, because we're doing full decorating schemes, is houses that are empty. So unbelievably, there are all these houses. They do tend to be centralised in London, these type of location houses, that are completely empty, devoid of furniture, just painted white. And companies like the magazines or the big retail brands or the big furniture brands go in, completely decorate the space, lay carpet, wallpaper, the whole lot, hang curtains, truckloads of furniture, photograph it, and then 72 hours later, it's all painted white again. And I know the larger houses do tend...
Oh, Lucy. Squirrel.
See him off.
Like she's going to get
this. This podcast was mildly interrupted by a miniature bull terrier chasing a squirrel. So the larger houses tend to probably do really well because you don't just need the product in the shot, you need all the crew and everything else. And I know that there are lots and lots of websites that you can use to list your property, be it in London or all around the country, actually. They want country houses, they want log cabins, they want grand stately homes, they want narrow boats, you know. It's type of house could
huge
be a
variety
location house. Yeah. And it doesn't always have to be something that's used on screen. So I watched a programme recently called The Bodyguard. There's some ex-council flats in North London, which me and a girlfriend moved into when we just graduated. It was my really good girlfriend's. It was her council flat and I lived there with her. And there I am 20 years later watching Bodyguard and I'm like, oh my God, that's our block of flats.
Yeah.
And I rang my friend and I said, gosh, our flat's been on telly. She goes, not only that, but, what's his name? Richard Madden, the star, used our old flat, which she still lives in, as his dressing room. So she moved out in the day and
he moved in. And I know there are all sorts of different requirements. You know, it's not necessarily about having a really big house. When I registered mine with the location agency, mine's on with JJ Locations, and I have, anybody who's seen the blog or the Instagram will know that there's a step down into the library or the back half of my sitting room. And apparently they get loads of requests for that because it makes it easier to position the cameras and have the crew slightly lower than the room they're filming or something. I mean, I didn't completely understand the logistics, but there are all sorts of things you wouldn't imagine that come up that they're looking for. So they might want a room with you've got a round window in the corner. They might suddenly want a room with a round window just for one shot.
Do you think they might want a house with an electric blue hallway? Pink stair running. Do you reckon they're looking for something like that?
It might be quite niche, but...
So if you want to consider having your house listed as a location agency in order to earn some money, what's your tips then to go about getting your house listed?
Well, I think you can just approach some of the agencies.
There
are lots
online.
Of them. Yeah, there's First Option, there's the Shoot Factory, Light Locations, JJ Locations. So have a look at what they've got. They all have properties nationwide and they all have all different sorts of properties. And then there's various ways. Either you take the pictures yourself or they'll come and take them for you and they will manage it. So they will take a commission. And then basically it's just about fielding the requests and choosing what is convenient. It's much more tiring and disruptive than you think it will be, but it can be quite fun. It's quite an interesting way to do it.
And you might get to see your home on the telly.
Yes. Well, our home was in a video, pop video.
Was it?
Whose
pop video was that?
She's called Mae Muller, M-A-E, and you can see her. It's a breakup song. So she's breaking up with her boyfriend lying on our sofa in our sitting room.
We've got to put the link to that on our blogs in the show notes.
We should do, yeah. It's quite a good song, actually. It was in my head for ages. I quite enjoyed that. And then there was a bit where she had to row with him. and used lots of swearing, and they were doing it in our bedroom, and she had to slam the bedroom door. And eventually there were so many takes, I had to pop round to the neighbours and say, by the way,
that's not me
about to divorce my husband. This is a film crew going on. But that's just one way, isn't it? I mean, you were telling me you've got another plan.
Well, so, hello, you know, Lucy. As you know, we're renovating and doing up our house, and it is the bottomless pit. It's just so, for anybody who's doing up their house, we really, really feel the pain. It is so expensive. And especially when you keep finding little hidden things, like we found the rising damp, didn't we, before Christmas. So now we've just about got it to a point where we think we could consider doing it as a holiday rental. So this idea is if we're away on a week's holiday, then we could rent our house out for a week. And depending on the type of holiday we choose to take, well, it could pay for our flights. It might even pay for the whole holiday.
Well, and you've also, presumably because your mother is effectively on site in the annex, she could let people in. Because you've got to have that kind of aspect, haven't you, of working out what time are the guests logistics. Arriving and who's going to give them clean towels and things.
That's the thing I would recommend looking into is, yes, if you've got your mum next door, a really useful neighbour or someone you know, or you can get a professional housekeeping team in to do those changeovers, which includes linen hire, which is a really good idea. So you're not using your own sheets and towels.
That is good.
You're using hotel grade sheets and towels.
Yeah, which they then take away and wash and replace.
They get takeaway, And they are also available 24 hours around the clock. So if you are away and
something happens.
And something happens, then they know your house and they've got your contacts for the boiler man or whatever.
Yeah. But also you can do it on a sort of temporary basis as well, can't you? So I live in North London, not far from Alexandra Palace, and there are loads of gigs there. And a friend of mine just uses Airbnb for one bedroom with a bathroom next to it. And she gets loads of people who rent it because they want to come and stay for one night. They go to a gig up at Ali Pali and then they leave the next day. So she has a fairly sort of constant turnover of people just coming for that. And sometimes she throws in an evening meal and sometimes she
doesn't. You've got to identify what your house would offer somebody. Yeah. As you might be close to an airport. That could be another reason. I mean, the Airbnb currently have 2.9 million hosts on their site, which
that's
is just
extraordinary,
isn't it? And 14,000 new hosts every month.
So every month?
This is very much a trend, along with all the other sites like Home and Away and TripAdvisor. But really selling that kind of travel like a local, you know, that's their tagline.
But it does mean you've got to work quite hard to make your place stand out, hasn't it? So, and I would say what you've got to do now is make sure you've got a bit of an Instagram corner because people are always Instagramming where they've been to stay. And actually, on the train down here this morning with Kate, our lovely producer, she was showing me a place she went to stay over the Easter holidays.
Did you wear Airbnb then, Kate, this Easter?
It was.
And it was very lovely in Kent, I think. And the reason that one stands out, well, not least because of the very large taxidermy polar bear that was in the bathroom. But, you know, it's a good Instagram point.
Oh, my God.
So I think you need, in the point I would make is, yes, if you can rent out your home, it's great, but you would stand out above the competition if you've got a little of something that might appeal to the Instagram user on there.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think if you're someone who loves interior design, you're design savvy, you've got a cool home, then you'll probably do quite well on Airbnb and on these sites. So it's actually perfect.
Yeah.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
So in just a moment, we'll be catching up on the latest changes to Sophie's house, in her kitchen in particular, and of course, bringing you the design crimes. But before that, we wanted to take a moment to let you know about the guest coming up on the next episode.
Yeah, our exciting guest slot. So last time we took our trip to Trini Woodall's insta-famous bathroom. And next episode, we've got a real treat for you. We're off to chat to Pearl Lowe in her stunning Somerset country house. Now, Pearl has got the ultimate kind of country rock and roll retreat.
It's very
married
cool.
to Danny Goffey, who's the drummer of Supergrass. They are so uber cool. And her sort of sense of style absolutely exudes every corner of her house. I mean, our jaw was literally on the floor everywhere we turned. There's wallpaper, there's vintage. She's really into trips to Morocco, so there's lots of spoils
and
there.
And she knows her stuff as well, doesn't she? How to get her look. And she was really kind enough to tell us a little
she
bit about her shopping
so
tips.
She was so generous. Yeah. You know, so many interior designers clutch their little black book to their chest and they won't tell you anything. But she was so open and honest. You know, how she argues with her husband over, really, that wallpaper? I'm not sure I can live with it. So yeah, lots of insightful interior design tips and some funny anecdotes as well. So make sure you look out for that.
And we've got lots more exciting names lined up, actually. But do let us know if there's someone in particular you would like us to try and track down and get into their houses to share with you. And of course, if you have any other questions or suggestions for us, then let us know. Instagram usually works best, where I'm Mad About the House and she's Sophie Robinson Interiors.
So exciting stuff over on TV. We're seeing Interiors return to our TV sets, which...
Finally.
Finally getting rid of some of those wretched cookery shows. So there's a bit of a trend emerging. So we've got Sarah Beeny's new show, which launched in March, Renovate, Don't Relocate, which I think still falls into the property bracket, which is very much her genre, isn't it?
Yeah.
But rather than, you know, making your house pay, but in a different way, as in doing it up and selling it. And obviously, we're not really doing that right now in the current climate. Everybody's staying put, aren't they?
So
don't move, improve. So she's very much using that general trend to formulate this programme and looking at people's existing spaces and looking at knocking walls down, extending.
I think I read a statistic. Of course I did.
Stat queen.
That 7 out of 10 people are unhappy with their own home.
Well, literally on how it's working.
Well, exactly. And I think that's what Sarah's jumped off, is that idea that, you know, it's not actually perhaps that your house isn't big enough. It's that you're not using the space. So what Sarah's done, which is really interesting, is install hidden cameras in the home she's filming to see how people actually use the space and see then how much of the space they're using and when they're using it. So she can track then whether there's a logjam in the kitchen at 6 o'clock in the morning, but another room's completely empty, or whether one room is hardly ever used. So that's quite interesting, because I think we could all do with using our space more efficiently, making rooms multitask. So once she's tracked your activity through the house and how you're using the space, is she then takes them to her studio, where she projects a sort of flat plan of the floor.
You know, as an architect or yourself would plan it out and sketch it on a piece of paper, she's projecting that
life size.
Onto white floor studio.
So that you can see the outlines, you can see the walls, you get to see the space without any furniture in it and have a sense of how the rooms flow. Because when I'm looking at a space and helping a client, I often find looking at a floor plan a really good way to start, because I can then visualise from a 2D diagram where it might be sensible to take a wall down or put a door in. So she's taken that one step further by giving you a life-size floor plan for you to look at.
I tell you what, this new BBC Two show...
it's gone one step further. gone about 15 steps
totally,
further.
I mean, you know...
And it's called
Your Home Made Perfect
on BBC Two.
Yeah. And their big selling point, which before I saw the show I was very sceptical about, is they use virtual reality to help people visualize the space. So the premise of the show, for anybody who hasn't watched it yet, is they're taking a family who need their home remodeled. For whatever reason, their house isn't working for them on a practical level. Usually space feels too tight and they feel that they need to extend. And the show brings in two architects who've got quite different styles and approaches to architecture. So that's really interesting.
One, I think it felt to me, was one was very architect and in the pure form. And
that's
the other
Robert.
And the other one was more of a sort of interior design plus architecture.
So two really, really different architects. Then redesign the house to the client's brief, and then the clients get shown that design through the most incredible latest virtual reality.
Well, what's really clever is that they can put in a window and then show you how the light changes during the day.
Yeah.
So you really get a sense of what adding an extra window might bring to a space. And the point of the show is then that the couple choose which of the two designs, which have both come in on budget, they want to build.
So that's really interesting. They had £55,000 in an extension, which is a lot of money. But when you get architects involved, it's modest. And what interested me is Laura, who is the designer who also calls herself a kind of interior designer and architect, never talked about the budget being a problem. She never once mentioned, oh, you've only got a small budget.
Whereas Robert bought it, she extended either, did she? No, though?
So my whole thing was, I was really impressed what she did, because she identified that the budget, in her view, wasn't big enough to do any big architectural extension. And actually, she would remodel what they already had and invest in lots of storage, which I thought was really funny. And actually, the programme even posed the question, is storage architecture?
She moved internal walls, didn't she? And she flipped the kitchen from one side of the house to the other, which meant that it got more light.
So
it was a better place to be. So it wasn't that she wasn't spending the money, but she spent it in a very different way.
Yeah, which was less sexy than Robert's design. So Robert's design was really lots of jaunty angles, little triangular rooms, big windows.
It was very impressive.
It's very clever. And I was just looking at it going, no way are you going to do that for 55,000.
Yes, it's interesting. I looked at that and thought,
I thought the joinery and the carpentry alone is 55,000 before you've even extended anything.
Although I will make the point in that one, I think that house was in Scotland. So there's not London prices there.
Well, I think in order to get his design, you'd have to make significant compromises.
Yes, possibly.
That's why I think it's such a brilliant programme, because, you know, I watched it with my mum and my son, who's seven. All three of us
were all shouting at the telly,
loving at it. I was being really critical of one of the architect's designs. My son was getting really upset with me, going, "Mummy, that you're being so unkind. It's their house." And I was like, "Yes, but they've got that bit wrong." And I think that's what makes it such a brilliant TV show, is it brings design and architecture to life. There's loads of jeopardy. Which design are they going to choose? Yeah. Is it going to come in budget? Are they going to have enough storage, is basically what I wanted to know.
But what was so interesting, I thought, was it's very, very difficult, as I said, to visualise what your sitting room might look like if there was a door in that wall, or if that wall didn't exist. So this idea of having a projection, of being able to see, well, imagine actually if we freed up that wall and hung lots of pictures on it, it might look like that. It was so interesting.
I've always been a little anti all this VR technology, because I feel it can give people a very set idea what something's going to look like, and it might not actually look as computer perfect as it does. And I would say, for any of you tuning in and watching the show, I've only seen one, and for me, the virtual reality was better than the reality. And I think that's the danger. When they looked around, the VR representation of what the house was going to look like was slicker. It had nicer finishes, mural walls.
I didn't think that.
And then I found
really
the reveal disappointing.
I loved the reveal. But I've spoken to Cyan Astley, who...
She's the
project manager. She's on Instagram as Make It Morgeous, which is more than gorgeous. And her company's called Morgeous Design. And she's told me that there are 16 episodes coming out over the rest of the year. So there's loads to get our teeth into. And she said the last one, which I think will be quite interesting for a lot of us living in cities anyway, which is what to do if you live in a really skinny terraced house, which I do. So that's really interesting, because you can't move sideways. You can only go backwards if you want to extend. And those houses tend to often be quite dark, particularly in the middle, because they're long and thin. So that's quite interesting. And I think she said they were called Luke and Mimi. And they live in Grantham. Yes, so we need to look out for them.
Luke and Mimi's skinny terrace remodel.
Yes, and something to do with them having a fondness for Gothic looks.
Oh, amazing.
And I think Robert the architect might have trouble with that.
Yeah. He said at one point, I think, when they were talking about storage on the show, he said he's a Buddhist and people need to let go of their attachment to things. It's like typical dictatorial architect, isn't it? Sorry, I'm not giving you any cupboards because you just shouldn't have any stuff.
It's a brilliant show. I actually can't wait to see more of them. Right, come on then, Sophie, enough of that. Let's see the kitchen, because I'm sure it's changed completely since I was last here.
Yeah, we have been busy. We finally got the flooring laid.
I love that old floor. Those
I know
lovely
you did.
Old bricks.
I think of you often. When I was choosing floors, I was thinking, yeah, but what would Kate think?
Oh,
because Kate's
lovely.
In love with my original brick floor.
And this looks amazing. Well, as we come in. So it's still brick. Is it brick?
Well, no, these are reclaimed terracotta tiles. And
lovely.
Obviously the brick floor was terracotta clay and it went really nicely with the green units and the Oroco worktops. That sort of redness worked really well. But we did have to lose the original floor in order to have our underfloor heating. So they had to go. My husband did the knee jerk of, well, let's just put some slate down. I know. And I was like, no, it'll be too dark. It's grey. It's got absolutely nothing to do with this house. It's a country house in Sussex. It's tile hung. So we've already got terracotta tiles on the outside of the house. So I
nice kind of link.
I think that's the thing you have to think about. So I really wanted to go for terracotta tiles, but my husband, Tom, just has that knee-jerk Portugal villa. He's just got that connotation.
It can be a bit orange terracotta, whereas I suppose because these are reclaimed, there's a couple of orangey ones, but there's some greyish ones, there's some pinkish ones. I mean, actually, there's all sorts of different colours in there.
Yeah, and I think
they're fashionable hexagons.
Yes.
But you say they're old.
So they're
interesting.
So they're over 100 years old.
Wow.
And I did like the fact that they were hexagon, because like you say, that's quite a modern shape. And I've got a modern country kitchen, so I like the mix of it being a bit heritage, but also modern too.
And underfloor heating is just the dream. I don't have any and I wish I did, because particularly if your kitchen isn't very big and you don't have underfloor heating, you're losing a whole load of wall by putting a radiator on. And here's your Marlowe, ma'am.
Can I be on the podcast?
Do you want to come and say hello?
Hello.
What are you after?
I'm sorry to disturb you. I was just thinking of what I was doing and not looking to see if there was anyone in there, because a minute ago you were down
we were down the other end and now we're at this end of the house.
We're talking about the floor now.
I'll go and leave you.
All right, lovely. Okay. Thanks, Mum. See, that's the beauty of having your mum live next door.
Yeah,
you never know when she's going to pop in.
Bye.
Bye.
So, yes, we've used because I get asked this a lot, an overlay underfloor heating system. So it is water fed. The electric matting is great for bathrooms and small rooms, but it's not very energy
efficient. It's expensive to run, isn't it?
Really expensive to run. So this is an overlay system. So you don't have to do it in a new build or an extension. It can retrofit.
So you put it over the top of the existing floor.
You put it over the top of the existing floor.
But you took the bricks up then just because there's a height thing.
No.
You went over the top of the bricks.
Yeah.
So you have to factor in a bit of extra height.
So we've
presumably.
we've lost like an inch of the height of our
room. That's not bad. That's not
room.
Much actually.
Yeah. In fact, it might not even be as much as that. I think it's like a centimetre and a half or something.
So I could put that in my kitchen.
You could.
So I've got floorboards which are suspended floor, which makes it very tricky to put underfloor heating, because obviously there's just air underneath my floorboards and joists. So I could lay that over my floorboards and then put another
flooring on top. So new floor. What else is new in here? Oh, the last thing is just to bring the wallpaper all the way around the room now I've put the floor down.
So wallpaper in kitchens, can you wipe it down?
Yeah, so I've got heavily patterned wallpaper and it's quite dark. So actually that hides a multitude of sins already. So
if
you do get a little splattering of something up the wall, you're not really going to see it. Or the other thing I do with this is just put a decorator's varnish on top of the wallpaper to seal it and make it wipeable.
And you literally would just paint that on.
Just a roller.
So what you're saying is have the colours and patterns that you want, but pick the right finish so that it can work for that room.
And your cooking areas and your wet areas, I think, is where you want to have
tiles.
A few tiles.
Yeah. Interesting. That's also actually another trend that's coming through, which I heard again from Milan, that your kitchen shouldn't necessarily look like a kitchen. It should look like a room in the house in which you happen to cook and eat and wash up. So it's much less fitted. it's more open shelves with nice things on the shelf, or, you know, the sort of practical stuff might be hidden away.
And then cleverly, I've got a little pantry.
Cleverly, she says. I like how cleverly. She says. I've been very clever.
Well, no, in all credit, it was like this when I bought the house. I didn't design it this way, but there's a little pantry around the back. That's where I've got the bread maker, the Vitamix.
Yeah, you're very lucky to have that space.
So but all those ugly worktop appliances that we kind of want handy, it's a bit of an annoyance if they have to go into a cupboard. But they're out of the main site of the kitchen.
But what's interesting, I think, is that my instinct, had I bought this house and seen that, would have been to knock that wall down and make a bigger kitchen.
Did think about that.
And actually, it's much better having a slightly smaller kitchen with all the gubbins hidden away.
Yeah.
So, because I think people often walk into spaces and think, well, you know, the rooms are too small, and knock down the walls and you know, bring more light in. And there is, you know, often a place for that, but it can sometimes turn out to be quite a good thing.
I feel like I got off that really lightly. You didn't find any design crimes in my kitchen, did you? Talking of which, have we got any?
Well, I sort of nodded off there. Give me a second, I'll come up with one.
Well, have we got any?
We have got one in the meantime. I was going to say a reader. Clearly, I mean a listener who's got in touch. This is from Michelle Moffat. And she said, I'm just getting in touch with a design crime. I'm about to move into a new house and getting a little obsessed with the huge variety of gorgeous wallpapers available nowadays. Talking of which, so many to choose from. However, I think that wallpaper, which is trying to look like a different material, is a design crime. E.g., wallpaper that's meant to look like a faux brick wall, or faux wood panelling, or faux tiling. I think it looks like you couldn't afford the actual material. Because I think I'm going to say it depends on the surface, because I will admit I have looked at wallpaper that looks like wood panelling and thought, oh, that's quite fun. And there's a company called Meinhardt who do a wallpaper which looks like it's a velvet Chesterfield sofa.
Like a button back.
So, and I feel that that's quite tactile.
That's quite trompe-l'oeil-like, isn't it?
It is. And I quite like that, but maybe I like that because you wouldn't actually have a button back velvet wall. I mean, I have to
say. Would one not?
One might think about it, actually. I'm with Michelle on the wallpaper that looks like fake wood.
And brick. Those are the two, aren't they?
I have to say, I'm with her on that.
Thing about brick, raw brick in a property, is the texture and the ruggedness and the roughness and the rawness.
Yeah.
And you don't get that on a smooth wall. So it's contradicting itself. It's offering itself up to be one thing.
I also think you've got to think very closely about the house you live in. You know, sometimes you might really love the idea of having a false brick wall, but if you live in a very modern house that wasn't built out of bricks, then it somehow looks incongruous.
A lot of people have property that doesn't have a lot of architectural interest.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, what can I do with this very plain box room? It doesn't have cornicing. It doesn't have sash windows. It's just a boxy square, and trying to get some texture and interest in there. And I think that's where some of these faux wallpapers have been favoured. You can do them on one wall as well, which people have historically, I know she shudders, but that's historically been a trend that people have embraced. So one wall of wood panelling, and it's loads cheaper than going out and buying lots of reclaimed wood and sanding it and nailing it and getting it fitted to your wall.
But I'm coming
down. So a lot
down,
of it is a budget thing, isn't it?
But why would you even in real life nail a whole load of wood to your wall if you don't live in a log cabin? I think it's the idea that it can be incongruous. And, you know, we're looking at your beautiful wallpaper, which has got a pattern on it. Yours is flowers. You can also get abstract designs. There's a million paint colours. You can paint half the wall. You can paint a triangle of wall. You can paint a mural of geometric shapes on your wall. Somehow all that would fit in a house that doesn't have period features, for me, better than trying to make your house look like it's a log cabin in the middle of the Swiss Alps, or that it's a brick house.
I think it can be more subtle than that, though. I don't think people are trying to like create a film set within their home. I think with these faux finishes like the wood and the brick. It's just to give a subtle bit of texture, especially if you're into that quite stripped back, neutral Scandi vibe. You don't want the florals or the geometrics or the very out there maximalist prints. You just want a little bit of subtle texture in the background. I think that's why people have used them. I think the problem is they photograph well and look great on Instagram and shoots, but when you're actually in the room, something doesn't quite feel right.
I feel like it's disappointing.
Right.
I feel like you would go, it's the opposite. You know, you would go up to that wall and think, oh, that's going to be some lovely rough brick, and then it's actually smooth paper. And you get the opposite effect, actually, if you go to a house where they've covered the wall in material and you go up expecting it to be paint, and then
exciting,
it feels like material.
It?
See, I would do that.
Yeah, but that's expensive. Well, you can buy that. You can buy that.
There must be clever people with glue guns who can do it. I mean, I can't do it, clearly, but, you know, putting some material on the wall also feels like something different and a different way to add texture. It's the fake wood and the fake brick. I'm kind of all right with the others.
You're condemning it, aren't you? In it goes.
It's gone in my design
crime. In it goes into room 101.
Yeah, you're not putting it in yours. I am putting it in there.
In fact, you're jumping on the lid.
I am. I've put it in the design crime bin and I'm sitting on the lid so it can't get out. If you live in a house with no original features and you want to do something more interesting, do it with paint, do it with wallpaper, do it with material. It doesn't have to be silk. You can do it with a bit of linen. You can do it with a bit of cotton. But just don't... No, sorry. It's a design crime for me. So when we come and see your house next time, you're going to have a nice...
I'm going to have it everywhere, Kay. I'm going to have it everywhere. In fact, I'm...
wood wallpaper.
I'm on Wallpapers Direct now ordering it.
Really looking forward to that.
I can't wait. Right,
what have we been talking about? You're going to give us a little summary?
Yes, so, oh my gosh, this has been an action-packed episode, hasn't it? So we started off by discussing how we can make our houses earn us a bit of money. And I think the take-home thing here is if you've got quite a large and spacious home, then it can be very lucrative renting out for photo shoots or TV shows. If you've got a house that's more cute, quirky and interesting, consider renting it out on Airbnb. Then we talked about the latest trends in TV shows, and we urge you to go watch Make Your Home Perfect. It's so good. Get involved. Let us know what you think. Is Robert all mouth and no trousers? That's what I want to know. Can he keep it in budget? I'm not so sure. And then finally onto my kitchen makeover. I think one of the big things that we unearthed here is don't always jump at knocking down all those walls in your kitchen to make it bigger. Sometimes it's good to have a little pantry, a little utility room where you can go and hide all those unsightlies.
And with that, all that information will of course be on our blogs, sophierobinson.co.uk and madaboutthehouse.com. And we're actually now halfway through the third series. So if you haven't yet been onto the podcast to rate, review and subscribe, and this was Sophie's line, you were going to say that because it's the massaging ego bit. You do that.
So you do it. Go on. Bloody do it.
I don't want to do it.
Go and do it.
Right.
I can't say it. Okay, come on, people, because Kate can't do this. I'm going to urge you to rate, review and subscribe and generally massage our egos. Tell us we're fabulous. Tell us we're gorgeous. Tell us you love us. Look, the girl's cringing.
I can't say
it. Oh, my gosh, she's literally on the floor dying. Just tell us that we are essentially what you've been waiting for. We're podcast gold.
Obviously, I can't ask for that, but I will say that we do read all that feedback and it does help other people to find the podcast. So please do.
And finally, thanks so much to our fabulous sponsors, DFS. And thanks to our producer, Kate Taylor. And a huge thanks to you, as always, for listening.
And we'll see you in the great indoors.
You came for a lie down now.
I feel a bit weak. What with that and the faux brick wallpaper?